this is a very few. But some recent and some old ones I thought people might want to read. Nine books, nine innings, and I got an extra inning one. Perfect Eloquence, the book that Tom Hofarth put together with people's memories of Vin Scully. It's a fabulous book, and anybody who's any kind of a sports fan, I would recommend you buy that book. And you can always get a hold of me through the English Department of the University of Maine. Send me an email if you miss any of these. Oscar Charleston by Jeremy Beer was a real eye-opening book for both you and I. I mean, you hear about Oscar Charleston, Cool Papa Bell, people like that, but when you learn about them, you learn just how great they probably were. Now, at number three for the third inning, there are two books here. Maybe I'll Pitch Forever, Satchel Paige's memoir from Grove Press, and The Pitcher and the Dictator from Nebraska by Avril A. Smith. Put those two together, and you'll get Satchel's version of things, and you'll get the well-researched version of especially his time in Cuba. It's really interesting. Then I would rather listen to the World Series on the radio than watch it on TV. And that reminded me of Crack of the Bat by James R. Walker, a book that we talked about, and we talked with him about when baseball became a radio sport. Became if you don't have the Wax Pack by Brad Baloukian, you don't have it. That's by Nebraska as well, where he got a pack of baseball cards, opened them up, and sought out all the people in that particular packet, and it was a pretty interesting story, to say the least. And that became a bestseller, and that was a University Press book. A book that is near and dear to my heart from Michigan State University Press by the late Michael Steinberg, Still Pitching, a memoir. A memoir of him growing up in Brooklyn, pitching in high school baseball, and about so much more. It's just a wonderful story. Again, Still Pitching, a memoir, Michigan State. Smokey Joe Wood by Gerald Wood, a book which Bob Ryan liked so much that he blurbed it. I've met Gerald. He's a great guy, and it was a really good book. Then in the eighth inning, I came up with Summer Baseball Nation, which was our tour of the Wooden Bat Leagues by Will Gagan. Summer Baseball Nation was a delightful book that took us from Alaska to the Cape to all around. Number nine, Baseball in the Cold War, one of my all-time favorites. A soliloquy on the importance of baseball in the life of a serious student of Hegel and Marx. It's a subtitle from Harcourt, Brace, and Jovanovich, which is now something else, by Howard Senzel. It's a really good book. It's about how baseball... there was a spent bullet that struck a New York Yankees player when they were playing the Havana Sugar Kings. That became an excuse to depart from Cuba and break all ties with Castro coming in. But if you like that, baseball in the Cold War, for extra innings, read Tim Wendell's two novels set in Cuba, Castro's Curveball and Escape from Castro's Cuba. Again, you want to know what those are, just send me an email. You can go to the English Department webpage at Maine, and I'll pop up, and you can send that to me. I also thought it'd be interesting. Everybody knows Casey at the Bat, the poem, but not a lot of people know the story behind Casey at the Bat. Ernest Lawrence Thayer, who wrote it, was born in 1814, and was born on August 14th in 1863 in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Rich kid. He was educated privately, enrolled at Harvard. He studied philosophy and was the editor of The Lampoon in 1863. Wow. In 1885, he graduated magna cum laude. College friend William Randolph Hearst invited him to join the San Francisco Examiner as an editorialist, and he became a humor columnist who wrote under the pen name Finn, P-H-I-N. Casey at the Bat, he wrote, is fictional, no matter what other people said. It was published in 1888, made no impression on the public, but DeWolf Hopper dramatically recited the poem on August 14th in front of an audience that included many baseball players from the New York Giants and Chicago White Stockings. Over the next 50 years, he recited the poem 10 to 15,000 times. Some say as many as 40,000. And Hopper even played Casey in a silent film in 1914.
And I did not know this until recently. I don't know how I missed this as a big fan of both. But DeWolf Hopper was married a bunch of times. His son was the actor William Hopper from Perry Mason. because one of the women that DeWolf Hopper married along the way was Hedda Hopper.
Yes, and that's William Hopper's Paul Drake. Right?
Yes.
Paul Drake. I did not know that. How about that? So later he went to work for the New York Journal, and after that point he didn't do much writing until close to his death when he wrote several articles about philosophy. In 1913, he married Rosalind Hammett, which I find really interesting because Dashiell Hammett and my wife's maiden name is Hammett. And there are not many Hammetts. Mm. Moved to Santa Barbara, where he spent the rest of his life. He died in 1940. So born right after the Civil War, died just at the outbreak of World War II. I thought that was an interesting thing. We're going to read some poems from a book we've talked about before, Hummers, Knucklers, and Slow Curves. It's all baseball poetry, edited by friend of the show Don Johnson, forward by W.P. Kinsella, includes poems by Donald Hall and John Updike and many other luminaries, and our friends Ron Smith and Don himself. This is a poem by Jim Daniels called World Series 1968. My mother's friend Angie from work knew how much I liked baseball and gave me a ticket she got from Vic Wirtz, the beer distributor, for the wedding hall her mother ran. Angie gave me allergy shots every week. She was beautiful in her white uniform. I went with her fiancé, who didn't know much about baseball. I was 12, caught between sports and the sexual wake-up call. Art was his name. And as we sat in the left field box seats upper deck, I wish Angie were with me instead. I bought ginger ale and shivered. He drank beer and shivered. The Tigers lost 10-1. Lou Brock stolen bases, Bob Gibson strikeouts. The wind blasted our faces. He wanted to leave early, but I wouldn't budge. I kept whispering, the World Series, but I was cold.
I love that opening line. Can you read that opening line again? It's just such a, it reels you right in.
My mother's friend Angie from work knew how much I liked baseball and gave me the ticket she got from Vic Wirtz, the beer distributor, for the wedding hall her mother ran.
Man, that is great.
Yeah, and that Wirtz was a former player is just fabulous. Let's see.
Vic Wirtz hit the ball that Willie Mays hauled in the catch.
In the great catch. This is a poem by Ron Smith. Ron will be with us in November, along with Elizabeth Strout and Chris Smither.
Love it.
A lot of guests in November. Called Striking Out My Son in the Father-Son Game. I wish I could read this as well as Ron would.
Oh, man.
Caught in the open in broad daylight, jerky-eyed with doubt, he swings like someone who's never held a bat. His elbows wrongly angle in, his wrists are snapless, when the soft, lopsided sphere drops from the sky. Anyway, those wobbly ankles and rattly knees cannot spank those Nikes off the bases or make a proper feet-first slide. His eyes are everywhere but on the ball. I arc three adequate pitches and retire the side. We joke our stiff adult jokes to the plate and cock our clubs at our squawking, crouching sons. Despite the jolt to dozing muscles, we find we can still hit and run, bellies leaning toward the outfield. We circle and circle the bags. On the mound, a grim boy tiptoes to see his best pitch ride into the left field pines. Another banker scores. My son slinks along a dozen fielders. My son slinks along among a dozen fielders trying to hide. He will have to come to the plate again with that gap between his fists. I haven't made him close. I climb the red clay, toe the rubber, and spit. From a row of hooting women, my wife glares at me through the shimmer of the heat. She can see the blood in my face. That means the steeper drop, the slower backspin. These little boys will never hit me today. I just can hear that in his voice. And then I thought this was a poem of mine that's coming out in Athlon that I wrote hoping the Yankees were going to be in the World Series last year, called The Big Ball Yard in the Bronx, remembering what catch is like as the sun starts to go down. As the sun set, we backed up, the grass-stained ball tough to pick up in the twilight. The pop of leather on leather, the soul sound in the yard. Catch needs no language, thrives on muscle memory, stirs up the long-ago child and smells the summer lawns, glove oils, singing bicycle chains, baseball cards, clothes pinned to the spokes. As the dark gathered, we eased up, tossed soft, easy batting practice lobs, as the fathers did when we still believed we'd patrol the outfield, own the mound at the big ball yard in the Bronx with Mickey and Whitey.
Oh, that's great.
And then I got a long one, but I don't want to creep into the next segment.
All right, Paul, let's do it in the second hour.
These or that?
That one.
Okay. Yeah. I got this short one here, and then that works. It's called Southern Syntax. This is something I actually heard, and it mentions baseball, but it goes along, hits a lot of sports. Very short. A young man stacking produce in East Tennessee said, "Ain't nobody didn't order nothing when I wasn't here on vacation." The most elegant quintuple negative I've ever heard. A sentence that makes no sense, but whose meaning is as clear as a tribal taboo, cry of a hungry child, peal of thunder on a humid afternoon. The poetic beauty in that sundered southern syntax is a hole-in-one, around-the-horn triple play, half-court three-point buzzer beater. Hail Mary cradled in the receiver's open hands, overtime backhander where mama hides the cookies. A Penobscot salmon striking a dry fly on a September morning.
That's awesome.
Bruce, I actually said that.
Bruce with Sports Lit 101. We got to take a break here. When we come back, Bruce talks with Maine hockey coach Ben Barr next on Downtown.
Ooh. Hi, this is Jill Sobiel, and you're listening to Downtown.
Where do I begin? Where do I begin? Clean up this mess I made. Where do I begin?
At Bangor Dental Associates, their top priority